Yes, we are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. John Wall doesn't need no introduction. It's an insider's look at the NBA and culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick of the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The Ian Rapoport podcast is sponsored by Casper Mattresses. We love our Casper Mattresses at the Ian Rapoport podcast. Casper Mattress is an award-winning mattress company that makes the most ridiculously relaxing, supportive mattresses sold directly to the consumers. Trust me, I sleep on one every night. The Casper Mattress is available in six sizes and has a 10-year full warranty. 10 fucking years. It's made and stitched right here in the United States. Free 2 to 5 day shipping in the United States and Canada. And in New York City, you could get it the day of. The guy will drive up with your mattress in a box and deliver it right to your fucking house. And if you do not like it, you have 100 nights to sleep on this mattress for free. If you do not like it, they will refund. They will come pick up your mattress for free. 100 nights. Go to Casper.com and save $50 using the promo code Rapoport, R-A-P-A-P-O-R-T. Casper Mattresses, we love them. The I Am Rapoport Stereo Podcast, again, coming live from Henson Studios. It's a historical place.
It's nuts.
We Are the World was recorded here. Rolling Stones, Jay-Z, Coldplay. Whatever you're into, pretty much whatever you're into.
Every genre
of everything was recorded here. This building, Charlie Chaplin built it.
Legend.
Then Jim Henson. This is the house that Kermit built.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, at what point did the Muppets come in?
They came in. They left. They tore shit up in here. Then they bounced. And then you know now you know everybody
right
has been in the hollowed walls of the former A&M Studios, A&M Records, Henson Studios. Who knows who we'll see walking? I mean, you think you see people at ESPN. I'm not even going to tell you who might be in the building right now.
I'll tell you right now. If Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem walk through, I might lose it.
They might be in here right now. You never know. I'm in here with another one of my interview series. Now, I want to make sure I pronounce your name right. Amin.
Right.
El Hassan.
Yeah.
My man from ESPN talks a lot of shit.
I try. Not as much as you.
No. Well, I want to get to that. Thanks for coming on the I Am Rapoport Stereo Podcast. You're an up-and-coming star on ESPN, and now you've been degraded to the I Am Rapoport Stereo Podcast.
Nah.
So this is you know, you're out here for the... We'll just jump into it. You're out here for the ESPYs.
Right.
You're fresh off the plane. Are you aware that Tom Brady's suspension
was upheld?
No.
Okay.
I've been out of the loop, the news and everything.
Okay, you're a sports guy. You're about that life. Tom Brady suspension, since you've been on the flight, since you came directly to the Ian Rapoport Stereo podcast interview, upheld. He tried to bring that bullshit into the Supreme Court. They shut him down. I think you could tell where I'm at with Tom Brady and his suspension. It's enough.
Right.
It's enough. You fucked around with the balls. I don't care. Well, the suspension this and the four games and the two games and steroids and the spousal abuse. None of that has anything to do with anything. We're talking about you, Tom Brady.
Right.
Now, what is your take on Tom Brady, this suspension, and this whole Deflategate thing? Because I'm happy as shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, I would say that it's kind of, you know, it's kind of ridiculous they took this shit to the Supreme Court, man. Like,
Isn't that ridiculous?
Like, they got more important shit to worry about. Let's not put goddamn whether you deflated balls or not on their agenda. Like, they have to make room for that. There's something else they put off.
They have to put it on the docket.
Right.
Because you won't just take your suspension like a man.
Take the L. But the other thing is, and, you know, a lot of people say, well, it doesn't matter. It didn't change the outcome of the game. Well, I said, that might be true. But I just want to know, why is it this organization is always in the middle of all of this clandestine, dirty shit? Why?
Break it down.
You know what I'm saying? It's like,
because people think, to me, let me just tell you, for me, people think I'm just a crazed New York fan who can't stand Boston. That is true.
Yeah.
But the other part is, if you can't do the time, motherfucker, don't do the crime. Don't do it. That's the song.
And by the way, also, don't be a habitual, like, yo, these guys habitually do shit.
Break it down. You're a professional.
I'm just saying, like, everything from Spygate to having dudes on your team that be committing murders while they're on the team.
Double murders.
Everything that goes around. Like, what is it about? And mind you, I think the Patriots are a great organization.
Me too.
They win, and it's because they are like the San Antonio Spurs of the NFL in terms of consistently winning and reshaping their team around their stars.
Right.
And new faces
they
coming in.
They have a system.
Yeah, it's great. Look,
I just want to publicly say this once more. I was rooting for them versus Seattle. I don't know why or what happened. There was something about the Seattle, because I have no real stake in the game, but there was something about the Seattle team that I was like, all right, enough. And I love Richard Sherman, but it was like, enough, you guys. Shut up. Cut it down. Right. And I turned on them.
Right.
So I was publicly rooting for Tom Brady. So it's not like I have disdain in my heart.
Right.
Go ahead. You're a professional. Break this shit down.
But again, my thing is, so for instance, in the NBA, if you fail a drug test, like for smoking weed,
yes,
they test you a lot after that.
Right.
And so you're on the program.
You're
on the radar. You're on the program. So you can't walk around and say, why are they always picking on me?
No.
When you have like a track record as an organization of, yo, y'all don't do things by the book. Maybe they're the only ones getting caught, Mike. I don't know.
Who knows?
Maybe everyone's doing it, and they're the only ones getting caught.
But why would that be? This whole thing that bothers me is that there's a conspiracy. And if there was a conspiracy, then you know who needs to come clean with what happened is Goodell and Kraft. Kraft. You know this. But
they're boys, though.
They're not boys. And the day of the game that they played, there's a photograph of them before the game. So they're boys, but now I guess they're not boys.
If
they're not boys, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. So if they're boys, why would he go out of his way? Why would the NFL go out of their way? That'd be like sitting down LeBron James. He's the face of the league.
Well, that's the
Tom Brady is truly still the face of the NFL.
That's like the people who say that Michael Jordan was suspended for 2 years, that he didn't retire in the 90s. They were suspended for gambling.
What do you think about those theories?
It's nuts, because again, it's like what you just said. Let's take a step back. The number one athlete in the world.
Right.
Right? Who is driving this thing from...
Especially Jordan at that time.
Jordan at that time literally took the NBA from like, okay, Magic and Bird, that's pretty nice, to this is going on its way to being the most popular sport in the country, and cementing itself as the number two sport around the world, We're coming off of Barcelona in 92. Right. The NBA has never been hotter at that point.
Right.
You think David Stern said, hold them checks, you're going to have to sit out for 2 years.
Right, and we want to do this, and this is good for business.
It doesn't make any sense. It's the dumbest thing ever.
I agree.
If anything, the opposite. There should be a conspiracy that the NBA would do everything under
its
power.
There's a conspiracy about the conspiracy.
Yeah.
Well, and this whole thing, you know, like, I mean, I saw you on the jump around this period. And you know, every year this comes up. And then obviously it got exasperated by the Draymond suspension.
Right.
And then the Ayesha Curry, who I have nothing but respect. I love the Currys.
Right.
I love Del Curry.
Yeah,
I love. I've offered to babysit the Curry kids.
Yeah.
They're the cutest kids. But you know, that was a mistake she made. Listen, who am I to talk? I talk shit.
I talk shit too.
So, but this whole thing that the NBA is rigged. Talk about that, and then talk about, like, I mean, first of all, and first and foremost, before you started working in the ESPN,
right?
You're a fan. So for me as a fan, and I want to hear your take on this, like, I was like, I don't want to think this way. Now, listen, did I think Draymond should have been suspended the game 5, I believe it was, versus Cleveland? No, I don't. But again, you talk about track record.
Exactly. That's why he got suspended. He didn't get suspended because the nut tap was so... Because
he didn't even catch the nuts that time. Because if he caught the nuts, LeBron would have... LeBron didn't even know that he flailed at the long and fluffy.
Right.
He didn't know that. Anyways, but this whole NBA is rigged thing.
So again, I'd say like this. It's 30 teams. They're competing against each other on the floor, but they are business partners, right?
Right.
They're business partners. So in order for the NBA to be rigged, there's going to have to be multiple partners, not just one or two, multiples. Yeah, we're cool getting fucked to elevate someone else.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense. Why would they go along with that? Think about a guy like Mark Cuban.
Right.
Has he ever kept his mouth shut about anything that he felt was unjust towards him?
No, he hasn't.
Right? You think he would sit still and silently while the NBA had a conspiracy to get LeBron?
But Mark Cuban specifically, he's argued about when they lost to Miami, the calls and the calls and all that.
Exactly.
Stuff.
So this is the dude.
Right. Oh, I see what you're saying.
He's got no filter, no chill.
Right.
If there was a conspiracy, he'd be the first one talking about, man, we out here bullshitting with these conspiracies.
And to do a conspiracy that big, I mean, it's like, I mean, listen, do I think sometimes refs get caught up in the emotion of home?
Absolutely.
All that stuff. Do I think Draymond should have been? I think we talked about this. That game 5 and him being suspended. Now, listen, they had 3 other games to get it right. They didn't. Whatever. It is what it is. I mean,
But Mike, that was my thing about the Draymond Green thing, which is the same thing. We can go back to Brady and the Patriots. If you got 2 strikes, you can't be riding around with life in the trunk.
Right.
Like, at that point...
You
got to be a square. You got to be a Poindexter.
Cut it out.
I'm taking the bus. You know, whatever
it
is.
And you're winning the game. Stop.
Stop, man. You're winning. The game is won. That's it.
It was over.
3-1. And in that game, you're blowing them out. And Curry's having his first good game of the series.
Leave it alone.
They're laying down for you.
I know. It was tough. All right. So let me ask you a question. How did you get your start? Tell me about your story, how you wound up being, you know, so prominent at ESPN and in the sports world now. Break it down. Because I don't know anything about how you got there. I just was like, yo, this guy's bugged out.
You know what actually was funny? I was going to college in Atlanta. I wanted to be an engineer. I was going to Georgia Tech. I had no idea that sports was something you could work in. I was a huge, huge basketball fan. I'm talking about, so this is in the 90s. I'm keeping up with the CBA, what's happening with the CBA, when nobody knew what a CBA was. Well, CBA used to be the Continental Basketball Association.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was keeping up with the collective bargaining agreement.
Okay.
I was like next level fandom, but you know, I would never say that I was kind of professional level knowledge at that point. Right. So my buddy, Ken Cummins, shout out to Ken, he woke me up. He's my college roommate. It was a Saturday morning, like 6 in the morning. He wakes me up. He's like, come on, man. Let's go. The Atlanta Hawks got a job fair. And I said, the fuck out of my room. Like, 6 a.m., late night, the night before, I wasn't trying to hear that shit, right? Come on, man, let's go. We might get jobs. Like, man, they ain't going to hire us. Come on, man, da da da. And then finally he said, who knows, we might get to a couple games for free. And I swear to God, at that moment, like, I was just silent, and in my head, they were like, going to games for free, you know, that kind of sounds good. And it was a decision. Are you going to go back to sleep, or are you just going to see where this goes? So I said, all right, fuck it, let's go. Go over there. We interview. There's like a million people that we interview. We actually get hired, right? It's the literally entry level of all entry level. Street team, field marketing.
For the Hawks.
For the Hawks, okay. Right? And this is a time when the Hawks are terrible.
What year is this?
This is 99.
So who's on this team?
This was, so, Jason Terry.
Okay.
They hadn't traded for Sharif Abdul-Rahim yet.
Oh, okay,
that was a
okay.
big deal. But Jason Terry, Mutombo was still there.
Oh, okay,
but they ended up trading him for Theo Ratliff. Nazi Muhammad.
They were a mess.
They were a mess. They were a bad team. They
okay.
were Isaiah Ryder and Jimmy Jackson.
Okay.
Shout out to Jimmy, my homie, man.
Okay.
But anyways, so awful team. But you know, I don't care, man. I'm getting to go to games here and there. They're throwing us tickets. This is cool. So
you get a T-shirt every now and
then.
Yeah,
like get some gear, whatever.
Right.
You know? And
again, shorts.
As an NBA fan, like I was a Knicks fan, but I was really an NBA fan. So like. Yo, they're throwing us practice gear. Like, I still got a Jason Terry practice jersey.
Right.
Like, wow. I don't even know if that's worth anything.
No,
today,
but I got you. You're happy to be there.
Yeah,
and you're young.
Yeah, but the most important thing was I'm in contact with all these people. So I used to think if you want to work in basketball, your last name had to be West. Or you had to have played somewhere or something like that. So now I'm starting to come in contact with these people. Like, nah, this is our career. We work in basketball. So I said, I want to do that. So I made the decision. I said, I'm not going to be an engineer. I transferred out of Georgia Tech. I went to Arizona State.
Wow.
Because they had a really good graduate sports business program. So I was like, if I graduate from the undergrad, maybe that'll help me get into the graduate program. So towards the end of my, literally my last year there, I had like one class to go. It was an internship. So I got an email from the Knicks. They had like a subscription list, like where they post internships. And it's always usually like ticket sales intern in Utah, unpaid. Always awful, awful jobs. This
for
one,
the Knicks, but working in Utah.
Oh, no. I mean, for it's all NBA teams.
Oh, okay, okay,
right.
Okay.
So, but this one was basketball ops in New York. Unpaid, but there's a stipend, like $25 a day for food and your
right.
Metro card or whatever. And so I'm thinking, oh, I can live at home, so that's not going to be an issue. Like, basically, the $25 a day, I can just get that monthly card or whatever.
Right.
And I budgeted enough for $5 for lunch every day.
Okay.
So I applied, and, you know, they whittled it down, and I was a finalist, and I flew in and did the final interview, and I got it. And this is 2004? So the year of the lawsuit. Not the lawsuit, but the events of the lawsuit was the year.
The Isaiah Thomas, the post-Isaiah
yes.
Thomas.
Well, no, this is Isaiah, but like the things that happened,
right.
That, like they were talking about in that lawsuit,
right.
Was from this season.
I got you.
So I did that, and I was so sure, man, like I'm going to get in there, I'm going to wow everybody, and they're going to hire me, I'm going to be working for the Knicks, my favorite team. This is like a dream come true, right? You know, I'm a hero back home.
Right.
Like we go back to the hood and like,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
I learned a lot, but at the end, like there just wasn't a place for me because really the way it was there's a rotation interns.
Right.
And so this is like the intern desk. And so when we're done here, you got to go because another intern coming in. So it's not like even if they wanted to keep me, it's not like they can give me this desk because that's the intern desk. Right.
Right, right, right.
So basically that I went back to plan A is going to go to grad school. So I went back to Arizona State, went to grad school, and while I was there, I managed to get an internship with the Suns.
Mm.
And this was the one where all my dreams came true about wowing people with, you know, what I knew and my work ethic and all that stuff. And it was good for me because at that point I was building off of what I learned at two other organizations. Now I'm not just like coming in fresh. Now I was like, yeah, I work with the Hawks, I work with the Knicks. I work with coaches, I work with players, I've done video, and when I was with the Knicks, the most important thing I learned was analytics. I'd never heard of it before, but one of the guys there taught me that stuff.
What is analytics? Stats, details, about basketball, right?
Right, so the idea that we can find trends and find things that are not apparent if you just look at the numbers a little bit
going
smarter.
Going through film?
To me, I would count that, but I think the general public probably would not count film work as that. But it's to me, it's always been a part
but
of it.
But how do you get these analytics? Because I think that, you know, one of the things in sports across the board, but definitely basketball and football, you know, like, just so you know, there's
right.
no fact-checking on the I Am Rapport
right.
Stereo podcast.
Yeah,
right? So you could say anything.
Reckless. Let's get reckless.
Yeah. And just, you can make a mistake. You could, three
right.
could be four could be three. But the analytics of sports, to me, at times, like, everybody wants stats. Everybody, you know, got their fantasy team. Right. Everybody wants to know about the. But it's sometimes it's like watching a ticker, you know, for like, you know, a weather report. You know, it's too much stats, too much details. Like, it's like, okay, I get it, man. This is not the stock market.
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, to all the people wondering about this stuff, I say it like this. It's not like a 1950s computer where you go beep, boop, beep, and it puts out a little piece of paper like, play Draymond Green at the five. It doesn't work like that.
How does it work?
It works in conjunction with all, like, with your scouting, with your background knowledge, with the inner communication. It's all a part of the decision making. Right. But it's never the decision was because of this.
I got you.
So a great, like, what is analytics? It's kind of grown over the years because we got more information available to us. But at the base level, it was, how can we be smart about how we count things? So, for instance, we've got two players. One shoots 2 for 5 from the field. Put you on the spot with math. What is that percentage-wise?
What is that? 2 for 5 at the field. Is that 50?
40%.
40%.
One guy
shoots. Public schools of New York City failed me.
Another guy shoots 3 out of 5. 60%.
60%. I was going to say 60%.
All right. Who's the better shooter?
60%.
Okay. Now, what if I told you the guy who shot 2 out of 5 shot 2 3-pointers, and the guy who shot 3 out of 5 made 3 layups?
Oh.
They both scored 6 points.
I got you.
On 5 shots.
I got you.
Why is this guy a better shooter than that guy?
I got you.
So, right? So, it's things like that. So, or for instance.
Breaking that down to getting the clarity of the stats.
A little bit more context than just saying, hey, no, this guy shot 3 or 2, he's better, right? Or he shot better. Or, for instance, this was really big for us at the Suns. People used to say, Suns are terrible at defense. Suns are terrible at defense.
This is the Steve Nash years?
The Steve Nash years, right? So I was in a heyday, like when Amari gets suspended and all that, like with all that stuff I was there for. So you think about us, it was like, oh, they're so bad defensively. Why? They give up 110 points a game. Yeah, but our games were so much faster. Right. So much more possessions. So if you look at, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers with Mike Fratello.
Yes.
They will hold the ball for 23 seconds.
Yes.
So the game was slow. So then, you know, they'd hold teams to 80 points, but
The opportunities weren't there.
Exactly. So if I'm scoring 80 points on 70 possessions, I'm busting your ass.
Right.
It doesn't matter that I scored only 80.
I got you.
Like, every time I got the ball, I scored.
I got you.
As opposed to if I'm scoring 100 points on 120 possessions.
I got you.
Like, yeah, I scored more points, but I'm missing so much more.
Right.
So those are the kind of things back in the day when I was working, we were just trying to get people to think of things in those contexts.
Okay.
Nowadays,
it's all over the place.
Brother, they got cameras in the arena that take a picture of everybody every 1/20th of a second. And then we can.
Wow.
So now we know where the ball was, how far I was from you when you took that shot, what you should have done defensively.
And the teams are looking at all this
Absolutely.
Stuff?
Absolutely. Now you're hiring programming guys, software engineers.
Just to get it out.
To make sense of the data, because right now you're getting all this information.
Right.
What does this mean? So they're trying to interpret all this data.
I got you. All right, so back to you. So then, so you're working at Phoenix, and then, go ahead.
And so first 4 years I'm there, like I said, this is the heyday. We're kicking people's ass. We're everyone's trying to play like us.
Back-to-back MVPs, Steve Nash.
Yeah, back-to-back MVPs. This is, like I said, Amari coming off the bench and getting suspended. This is us going to the conference finals against the Lakers and that Ron Artest put back.
Yes, yes.
All that stuff, right? At the end of that series, which, by the way, it was a great series, there was, to me, it encapsulates, like, when you're playing against a better team.
Right.
I would say 7 times out of 10, if we play a 7-game series, you're going to kick our ass.
Right.
But there's the stars and the planets and the moons align. We might be able to pull this thing out. And that almost happened for us. And Ron Artest making that layup changed everything. Right. But so that we come out of that, like, we're disappointed. We thought we had a good chance to win a championship that year. But we feel happy. We're upbeat. Like, yo, we got a good thing going here. And like a week later, Steve Kerr leaves.
Yes.
And then a day later, David Griffin, who is the general manager of the Cleveland Cavaliers, leaves.
Okay.
And this is all because the owner, Robert Sarver, lowballing people and going back on his word on a couple of promises that he had made before the season. So now, by the way, I want everyone at home who's a basketball fan to think about that. So the general manager of the team that just won and the head coach of the team that won last year were both on the same team, and they got driven out.
At Phoenix.
In Phoenix, right.
That's big.
Think
Those
about
are basketball
that.
Minds.
Think about that. I mean, that's like, you know, the team that traded Parrish and Kevin McHale.
Right. Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, for Joe Barry Carroll.
Right. Joe Barry Carroll. Shout out to Joe. Where is Joe Barry Carroll?
I don't know. I wonder if he still barely cares, though.
Joe Barry Carroll was...
He could play.
He could play. But, he's one of my first introductions into Golden State. That's why I've always had an affection.
Really?
Yeah, Lloyd Free, Warby Free, my man.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, Bernard.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Run TMC days.
Yeah,
but I've always had an affection...
So you're a little older than me. Like, Run TMC was my, like, oh, man, what's going on out there?
Right, they were doing it.
Right, yeah.
All right, so then go ahead. So how do you get to ESPN? How do you become, in broadcast?
So they change management, right? And the guys that come in, I'll put it bluntly, they don't know what the hell they were doing.
Okay.
These guys, I went from people who would live in basketball, love that shit, breathe that shit, would be doing it if they were, like, working at Taco Bell, to guys that were in it for, who weren't in it for the culture.
Right.
They were in it to get the charter flights.
Right.
To stay at the 5-star hotel.
I got you.
To say, I work for such and such. But, like, they're not watching games or none of that stuff. And so I'm getting frustrated. And everybody around me is kind of like, well, this is the new reality.
Uh-huh.
And I'm the only one who's chirping because I don't know how to keep my mouth shut.
Right.
I'm like, don't do that. What you doing? Where they do that at? Like,
right.
I'm saying this stuff out loud. So eventually what ended up happening was I'm butting heads with these people every day.
Okay.
So... basically made the mutual decision, like, this ain't going to work. I'm leaving. We go our separate ways. I go out. I said, I'm going to get another NBA job, right? So I'm looking. I'm searching. I got a buddy of mine who works for ESPN. He'd always wanted me to come do a podcast with him or do these little videos with him. I said, I can't. You know, the team ain't going to let a middle manager pretty much start talking for the team or whatever. So as soon as he saw I was out, he's like, well, can you do it now? I said, sure. I'm thinking, I'll do a video. Maybe one of these teams I'm talking to will see, like, hey, he knows what he's talking about.
Uh-huh.
Give me a look. Well, what ended up happening was someone at ESPN saw it and said, does he want to write? Because we're looking for someone to write from a front office perspective.
I got you.
And I said, I've never written anything but college papers and scouting reports, so I don't know. So they said, write a sample piece. Wrote the sample piece. They liked it. They said, all right, we're going to pay you freelance. Buy the piece. 10 pieces. At the end of it, we'll see if you like it, if we like your work, and we'll talk about something more.
So this is like blog or for the magazine or
general? For .com, right?
I got
this. For .com, right? For the insider section, the subscription section, right? So after the 4th, they flew me out to Bristol for the whole, the car wash, right?
Right, right, right. And you're just speaking on, like, you're going on shows talking.
Yeah. So, and we start negotiating.
Okay.
And then probably a couple of months after that, I sign a contract deal to throw me a bunch of money. Each month, I got to just submit so many pieces of work,
okay.
Right? That goes to the end of the 2013 calendar year. At that point, they signed me to a 3-year deal, the benefits deal, as I like to call it.
Uh-huh.
Health, dental, vision, but most importantly, I get to Disneyland for free.
Uh-huh.
3 of my closest friends. I got the Disney card in my pocket right now. You want to go after this?
Let's go.
Let's go after
Let's
this.
Go. We should be podcasting from Disneyland. I'll be thrown up on every ride. It doesn't matter what ride it is, how young.
It's a small world after all.
I'll be vomiting on it. So
when I signed that deal, they say to me, at the end of the 3 years, you might be doing some TV, right? Mm. 6 months after that, I did my first SportsCenter hit.
Oh, okay.
It was the draft, I think. They brought me in for draft week. I'm telling them about the prospects, whatever. They say, okay, after that, they're like, yo, you did a great job. I'd never, you know, and at that point, I'd never done TV before. So they were like, do you want to come back next weekend for free agency? I said, sure. Now, this is the summer of LeBron, right? LeBron wouldn't sign, and we didn't know what was going on. And
I've heard of it. I've heard of that.
Nobody
summer.
Would sign, remember?
Right.
Nobody would sign. So I come back. We talking about what's going to happen, da-da-da. He still doesn't sign. I said, can you come back again? I said, sure. And this keeps going on until he signs. And at the end of that, they were like, yo, you did a great job. Do you want to be in the permanent rotation of SportsCenter? I said, yeah, sure. So that next season, I started doing SportsCenter regularly. And then what happens at ESPN is, because it's such a big company.
Right.
Like, a lot of people didn't know who I was.
Right.
But everybody in their office and desk got a TV, and it's on ESPN or ESPN2.
Right.
And so they'll be working, and I'm like, who's this dude?
Right.
Or like, I'll be on Mike and Mike, like, who's this dude?
Right.
And they're like, can we get him on our show?
Right.
And so what ended up happening, like, I'd be on His and Hers. I'd be on, a Le Batard show.
Got it.
And then Sports Nation. And then all these things. And now, all of a sudden, you got some momentum. We're already doing digital videos. We're doing things that aren't like your standard digital videos on True Hoop TV.
Right.
Right. With my boy Jay doing the production. And so now I'm starting to put all this momentum. Now radio's saying, hey, you want to do a radio show, a weekly radio show with Mark Stein and Brian Windhorst, NBA insiders. Uh-huh. Oh, sure. But now all the radio people are listening because they just listen all the time. Like, yo, who's he?
I got you.
He's got a personality. Does he want to come fill in for George Sedano when he can't make it?
Or I got you.
For, you know, Ryan Russillo when he can't make it?
I got you.
So now I'm doing the fill-in jobs, and now everyone's hearing me. Levitard is now asking me, instead of to come on as a guest, now he wants me to do a guest co-host for the whole show. Fly to Miami. Come do the show with us. And it's all kind of building up. So what happened with The Jump, actually, was the producer, Kevin Wilds.
Right.
They knew they had to make an NBA show,
right,
part of our TV rights deal,
right,
a new daily show. They didn't know what it was going to be. This Rachel's still at Turner.
Right.
So I was one of the group of people they reached out to and said, what should this show look like? And we shot pilots and there were different versions and everything. And then when Rachel came aboard, I was like, okay, it's Rachel Nichols' project. But, you know, I knew Rachel a little bit. And I knew the producers because it was the same producers from Sports Nation.
Yeah, yeah.
So they were like, I think this would be a good fit. And that's how I started doing The Jump. And really, that's the show that between that and Sports, I mean, not Sports Nation, between that and Levitard, those are the two shows, I think.
That you got momentum in.
Yeah, because SportsCenter, shout out to SportsCenter, Sports Nation. I love doing all those shows.
Right.
But those are shows where there are a lot of people on those shows.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
One day it's LZ Grandison. One day it's Marcellus. One day
got
it's...
you.
So it's like, yeah, I might do it, but like, I'm not identified with that show.
I got you. I got
the
you.
The Jump, I'm identified with it.
This is the Iron Rapport Stereo Podcast. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
What is your goal? Like, now that you're in this and, like, this is, a, like, a career,
yeah,
like, what is your, like, in your head, like, what is your, like, do you want to broadcast? You're not a commentator. Like, that's a whole other,
like,
skill set.
Play-by-play. And
that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Like, those guys are, like, on
so
another level.
I'll even go one further. I did sideline at Summer League on Friday.
Okay.
Right? Did the Craig Sager.
Yes.
That shit is hard.
Why,
man,
is it hard?
Over?
So you're doing it like they're doing, all right,
live.
Cut to you, 3, 2,
yeah,
1, boom.
It's live. It's like, and Amin's right now next to Luke Walton.
Right.
And so I'm talking, and then you got a producer in your ear saying, ask this, ask that. And then say, keep asking questions, keep
right
going.
There.
And so, you know, you want to, my thing is, I don't want to ask cliche questions.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
I want my questions to be good.
Right.
I want them to be challenging.
Right.
Right. So I asked straight up, I asked Tom Thibodeau, yo, how do you control yourself? Because you're the president and the coach. So you can overrule yourself as president to do something that the coach really wants, right? So, and I asked Alvin Gentry, yo, you guys lost Ryan Anderson. I thought he was a big part of your offense. What are you going to do now?
And you're asking these guys this during the middle of the game.
In the middle.
Which is tough.
Live TV.
While you're working, they're working.
Yeah.
And the last thing they want to be doing is talking anyway, right?
But I will say this. In summer league, so nobody gives a fuck, really.
Right. Okay, so they're a little bit more relaxed.
They're more relaxed. But even within that relaxation, I'm still kind of like, yo, it's hard, man.
Right.
So I can't imagine what it would be like to ask Popovich after the first quarter when they got blown out.
Right, in a playoff game.
In a playoff game.
I
like that
you.
That, like, with Sager and Lisa Salters and
right,
all those people do, yo, much respect, and I could never do
it's
that.
It's a challenging job.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah, man. Same thing with the play-by-play people. Same.
That's a whole other thing.
Color commentators.
People think that's easy.
No, man. No,
that's no joke.
It's not, because it's not like you're not, you can't just riff. And like summer league, you can, because again, nobody gives a shit about what's happening on the floor.
Right.
It's more about what did your team do in the offseason.
Right.
You know, what should we expect from them next
it's
year?
It's more low key.
And then you'll see Ben Simmons do something like, yo, he's going to look great when he's doing that alongside, you know,
right,
Jared Bayless, whatever.
Right.
It's low key, right? In a game, like, you got to be addressing.
Marv Albert isn't Marv Albert because it's a fluke.
It's not because his voice is dope.
Yeah.
Which it is.
Right.
But it's not just that.
Right, exactly.
He's got an uncanny way of describing what's happening.
Right.
But also doing it in a funny way. He's
right,
not dry.
Right.
He can crack jokes. And then, like, also that ability to transition from we joking here, oh shit, something happened.
Right.
And make it smooth.
Yeah, those guys are great.
They don't put anybody on blast or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, those guys are good. So what did you see at Summer League? league? What was impressive? What was not impressive? What bored you to tears? I've been down to some of those summer league games. It's amazing because these guys are playing for their lives. Some of them,
yeah, many of them.
And the reality is like you said, nobody cares.
Right.
It's not that. It's sort of a laissez-faire. It's Vegas.
So
I don't know why you're putting 19-20-year-old first round draft picks in Vegas.
Because that's the life. So I was getting this argument last night with somebody. They're saying, Orlando summer league is better. It lets them focus on basketball. Da da da. I said, look, when we start this season,
right,
and we hit up that first South Beach trip,
right,
ain't gonna be focusing on basketball. They're gonna have to be mature adults and say, this is business. This is life now.
Right.
You got to be able. Ain't no bed checks.
I got
curfews.
You.
Mommy's not there to make sure that you're a grown man. You want to go out hard?
Right.
Go out hard. But guess what? Tomorrow, You better be ready. And if you're not, you lose your spot.
They check that. So it's kind of like it worked out
It's got its own self-check, right? So I'm not here. Like, we're going to have the discussion, especially with the young guys. I have the discussion a lot with them. We're in Vegas, guys. This is when I was with the team. We're in Vegas. We give them a per diem. Per diem is like $150 a day.
Right.
We give it to them all up front. So we're in Vegas 10 days. They get $1,500 cash. Straight cash, homie. Here we go in an envelope. Don't lose. Don't let me see you lose it all on the table.
Right.
And you asking me, can I get you something to eat?
And some of these guys can't even, they're 18, 19. Like, isn't there one kid from the Lakers, the skinny kid, who I don't even think
Ingram.
Went through puberty yet? Yo, is he 18 or 19?
He has to turn 19 before 2016 is over.
Incredible.
Yeah,
that's incredible. You're talking about an 18-year-old kid right now, or possibly just turned 19.
Right.
The fact that these kids are playing in the NBA is just... It's a magical, beautiful, crazy, dangerous... It's just incredible. I mean, it's a really special thing. When you think about the talent. Like, he's going to be going out there at some point and crossing paths with LeBron.
Yeah.
Straight
up. Went from dudes' posters on your wall to now this guy is talking shit to me and I gotta bust his ass.
And like that dude in Phoenix last year, the rookie, he looked
Devin Booker. Yeah,
what, I mean 19.
He was 18 when he got drafted.
That's
he turned
crazy.
19 midway, but he's a different story because his dad played Melvin Booker.
Right,
he played pro. Like the guys who had fathers play professionally, especially their fathers weren't like super duper stars, right? If your dad wasn't Magic Johnson or Michael Jordan, like you know the work involved and like the preparation, and this is
it's you almost have a shortcut,
yeah,
like what not to do and what should you do
exactly, right? As opposed to like Michael would be like, why don't you just pass it over there? Why don't you just make that shot? Like he can't articulate it because greatness came to him, and now he worked hard, but there's an element of greatness that just like, yo, I can never replicate that, right?
I got you.
But like a guy like Melvin Booker, like who's another guy? Like Steph Curry, his dad Del Curry.
Right.
Like, these dudes weren't guaranteed their livelihood. Like it wasn't like, yo, I signed a 7-year deal, we set. Like you kind of like gotta keep worrying about, yo, am I stable in this league?
Right.
Is my job? Am I gonna get my next job? I know I'm on a contract now, but free agency's coming up. Will people want me? Will I get the dollar amount I want? So you got to do all types of things, and watching film and prepping and working in the gym and all those extra eating good, all that stuff.
Right.
And so if you're a kid, you grow up, you just know this is what it is.
They look at it like more of like a job.
Right. Like if this is what you want to do for a living, this is how you do the job. And so they get a leg up in many respects. Coincidentally, I feel like a lot of the reason why Austin Rivers is not as good as he probably should be is because Doc, when he was growing up, Doc was in Boston.
Right.
Austin's in Orlando, so he really didn't grow up. Like, he wasn't old enough when his dad was playing to know what it was like. And by the time his dad is coaching, he's not around him.
Now, I was going to bring up the Austin Rivers. So what happened with you and Austin? What's up with you and the Rivers family in general? Because there was a beef, quote unquote beef.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Twitter beef, whatever. But what happened? Like, break down the you and the Rivers family beef. And have you been to a Rivers family reunion? Have you gotten that invite yet?
I have not gotten that invite yet.
Okay.
What happened was, all right, so I'm very, as we pointed out, I'm blunt.
Right.
So I feel like there's a lot of things that Doc Rivers as a GM does that's just terrible.
Like,
he's not a good GM.
Like?
Like, he's infatuated with signing guys that either played for him or played really well against him once upon a time.
Right.
So when you see a Hedo Turkoglu a Glenn Big Baby Davis.
Right.
Like, all these kind of signings. I mean, when these guys were clearly washed, when these guys were clearly, like, not NBA caliber
nostalgia
anymore.
Nostalgia signings.
Yeah, because, like, oh, I remember one more time he gave us work. Like, that's right. All it, or remember he was good for us or right. whatever. Jeff Green's another one. So, there's a lot. They gave up a first-round pick for Jeff Green.
Right.
Think about that.
That's crazy.
And then let him walk.
Right.
You know, so I wouldn't have given
them. You got nothing for nothing.
They gave up something for nothing.
Right.
Even if they kept them, they still gave up something for nothing. But now they really got nothing, right, to show for. So he doesn't manage the team well from a GM standpoint, right? And one of the things I think is they embolden Austin Rivers, who is a marginal NBA player, to act and feel like this guy's a star in the making.
Uh-huh.
So I'll be honest, this dude's not good.
Do you don't think he's good?
I don't think he's a good basketball.
Do you think he should not be playing? Like, do you think he's not NBA level?
Oh, he's NBA level, but in the same sense that, like...
Like, he should be, like, the 11th or 12th man?
Langston Galloway. Is he?
I got you.
You know what I'm saying?
I got you.
Right, so if you in this...
But Langston's had a lot of opportunity in New York because they didn't have any other chance.
Right.
They didn't have any other...
Right, but the Clippers are not the Knicks.
Right.
Right? Langston Galloway got opportunities because they ain't had no talent.
Yes.
This dude is getting, like, big minutes...
Yes.
And just got a $35 million contract with nothing to show for it.
So go ahead. So what happened with you?
So I'll say these things.
Did you say it on air or did you say it?
Yeah, I'll be like, wow, like, you know, hey, nice job, you know, Austin Rivers. Because again, like, I'm honest with this stuff. So what ended up happening was, and I was minding my business that night. I wasn't even thinking about the Clippers or anything. Out of the blue, the youngest Rivers son gets on Twitter and says, I wish I could fight Amin, right? Amin ESPN. So I think it's a joke. I'm like, ha, ha, ha. So I say, hey, man, don't end up like on that Summer Jam screen, right? Because like I'll put you on blast, right?
Uh-huh.
And he says, ha, ha, ha. No, but my brother can't talk, so I have to do the talking for him. So square up.
He's ready. He's ready.
Hold on. He said, square up, nigga, right? So that's like, all right. So I'm this guy's a college. He's still a child, even though he's above 18, and he doesn't play either.
Right.
He's like a bench warmer on a small school. I'm like, yo, it does me no good to get into, I'm a grown man. I'm not going to fight anybody unless we about to fight because of something, right? So I'll let it go. I'm like, all right, whatever. I swear to God, karma is a bitch because not 10 minutes later, Austin Rivers had that missed dunk against the Spurs.
And so I
tweeted the video link and I said, karma, boy, right on point or something. I made some, and then everybody just started roasting, right? Because that's how Twitter is. Twitter waits for something like
Twitter's
that.
Twitter's a vicious.
It's an animal. It's a machine.
It's a vicious place for things to go wrong.
And I've been on the wrong side of the law for Twitter. Like,
have you?
Oh,
were you like, oh my God, what's happening here?
No, because I've seen it happen. That when it started happening to me, I knew it was just like,
you gotta wait it out.
No, you just gotta literally just let go of everything.
Let God let go.
Yeah, and just accept it.
Right.
And to me, when it happens, it's happened to me probably like 3 times.
Uh-huh.
And each time it happens, just retweet it all, man.
Right.
I gotta go along with the jokes because you know what? I get it.
Right.
It's my time.
I agree because I'm a shit talker, and I feel like if you're a shit talker, you know, sometimes you got to take it. And I don't think you become a good shit talker without taking good shit. Well,
but you know how it is because it didn't start when you signed up for Twitter. It didn't start when you became a celebrity.
No.
Started years ago.
Years. I've been practicing for years, now I'm paid professional.
Since the first time you was in the cafeteria and somebody made look at his.
Before I even made it to the cafeteria, I was talking shit.
But that's what I'm saying. The essence started a long time ago.
Exactly.
And for most shit talkers, the good ones.
Yes.
I guarantee you could think right now of the group of people that you shit talk with the most throughout your life.
Yes.
And you're not even number one in that.
I'm not.
They're
faceless, nameless, great shit talkers. It's like street ball players.
Exactly. There's always some. If you really, real shit talker, you have shit talked with the best of them, and you know there's. Oh no, there was that one dude. He got me bad. Right?
Yes, and you
got
to be able to give it and take it because can't take it personally.
Because that's the only way you know. So these guys, a lot of people get on Twitter, and they try to say something. Man, right. I got a great segue here. I don't want anybody to get in trouble, but I got a great segue here. But anyway, there are people on Twitter, they talk shit, and then it gets thrown back at them, and they don't know how to react
right.
because they've never had that kind of upbringing or
yes.
that collegiate experience,
yes.
the school of hard knocks, right?
Yes.
And I go back to, there was an incident. I'm not going to use specifics so that we can protect the innocent, but there was an incident where someone was talking shit about you.
Yes.
And then your loyal fan base.
They went in.
They went in on him. And he got sensitive.
Yes.
And he made phone calls complaining.
Yes.
And my thing was like, look, if you don't want that shit to happen, stop talking shit.
Yo.
Right?
Stop talking shit.
Like,
because if you don't want that shit to happen, stop talking shit, especially with the Rapper Pack. Because the fans.
Right. The fans don't have chill. We have chill, even though we come across as chillless.
Yes.
There still is an amount of chill.
Because there's got to be a protocol.
Yeah, I mean.
Because also, like, if you're any sort of public person, there's no winning. Mm. If you get into an argument, even if you win, there's no winning.
Right.
And if you get in an argument and if you lose, there's no winning. But when it's just fans and fans and or followers.
They got nothing to lose.
They got nothing to lose.
They got
and they're relentless.
To lose.
And they could say whatever, they could swing, they could miss.
Right.
So
the point being, like, that was my whole thing was like, man, if you're not emotionally mature enough to handle this, like, it's real easy. You don't have to. You could have just said, I don't agree with what he said on that
right.
show. And kept it at that. And so people always say, oh, why are you roasting people? Like, 100% of them came at me disrespectfully. They
right.
didn't say, I'm not so sure.
No.
You said Tim Duncan's better than Kobe Bryant. I'm not so sure about that. It's never that.
No,
it's like, oh, you fucking clown. How the fuck do you have your job? Like, all right, you want to do that?
And you might be in a bad mood. You might be bored. You might be taking it. You who knows?
I'm never in a bad mood. I wait for those people.
Do you?
Oh, I live
But don't
on.
How do you deal with, like, so in regards to, like, look, ESPN is a brand.
Right.
You work with ESPN, and ESPN also is, like, is owned by Disney?
Disney, yes.
So how do you personally keep it where you're PC enough
right.
but also street cred enough in terms of to be yourself?
Okay.
like how do you sort of like ebb and flow with that, because I could find that to be a challenge, you know what I'm saying?
Right. So I'm trying to think of the name of this dude. You're a huge hoops fan, so I know you'll know this. I don't know if your listeners are on that level, but remember when the Wizards were the Bullets?
Yes.
And they played at the Cap Center or whatever it was called.
Yes, yes.
And there was a dude who
was Marion Barry?
Not.
You talking about Marion Barry?
No.
I thought we were talking hoops. I was thinking about Marion Barry.
Oh, I was thinking about Marion Barry.
No, because I saw this documentary last night about drug dealers in D.C. And, of course, if you're talking about anytime they get a chance to bring up Marion Barry. Anyway, so go ahead. So I just
guy got reelected, by the way. I want to remind
Marion
everyone.
Marion Barry was that dude.
Think about, like, what it takes to go
Think about what it takes to be caught on surveillance, to be the mayor.
Right.
Caught freaking off doing whatever he was doing. I don't remember if it was hookers, it was coke, whatever.
And then, a little bit of everything, Michael.
And it was on video. He was doing it all. He was doing he was doing the car wash.
Right.
And then get reelected. You're that dude.
Yo.
Like and he was blown up on Twitter and Instagram before Twitter and Instagram
existed.
He was that guy.
Yeah.
All right, so go ahead.
So anyway, so there was this dude, Robin, his last name, excuse me. He was a fan. And he had season tickets behind the visitors.
Oh, I remember this.
And this dude,
I don't remember his name, but this is that fan.
The super fan, and all he did was talk shit, and he like researched, like he had like surgical. And I remember reading this interview where this is like 95 or something.
I remember this guy.
And they asked him, I said, well, you know, do you ever like a fan? He's like, I never curse. He said, I always am cognizant that I'm at a family event in an arena. I don't want to ever use language. I don't need to get to that level to make fun of you. I'm
yes.
gonna make fun of you for your faults. I don't
yes,
need to.
Yes, yes.
Right. I'm not.
But he took it seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. No. He was doing like research and stuff. Like he was really going in. Right.
We got to, as far as a great shit talker. Actually, we got to get him.
We
got
to get him.
Rapport.
I don't know where. You know what? When they moved to DC, like they upped his season tickets like three times.
But he's a fan. He's a classic. Shit talk.
Oh, yeah. Classic. So that was always my thing. It's like, I'm going to get on here. I won't have to cuss you out. I won't have to use any sort of slurs or racial stuff or anything like that. I got enough probably out of either your profile picture
right.
or your profile.
All I need is a profile picture and I'm good.
Profile. Well, I sometimes I got to go into like, because a lot of them would be like, download my music, SoundCloud, whatever. Like, yeah. So I'll kill
but if
them.
I catch a profile picture of
oh,
you,
that's the first thing I look at.
Your grill is messed up.
That's the
your shirt's too tight.
Anything.
Your front teeth. You're cockeyed. Your girl's cockeyed. Your dog is cockeyed. I'm going to talk about your dog. I don't care what kind of pets, your cat, whatever's going. If I catch anything in your profile picture and you're talking shit, I'm going after you.
Absolutely. Because my thing is, you felt confident enough.
Yeah.
To either put that picture up or put that in your bio.
Right.
Now we're going to pick it apart.
Now we're going to go after
now
you.
We're going to go after
now
you.
Now we're
right?
going to go. I'm a paid professional.
You want to play that game.
Yes.
Because, like, here's the thing. I'm not sitting here saying I'm Cristiano Ronaldo.
Right.
I get it. My hairline ain't what it used to be. I get it. My teeth are a little big, right? I get it. I have big lips. I get it. I'm skinny. I get it. All those things.
Right. You've heard it all.
Heard it all. Guarantee y'all weren't the first ones to ever say that.
Right.
I got a lot of asshole friends in my
right.
life. We've all made these jokes over
right.
and over again. But if you've never had these jokes made about you.
Yes.
It's about to come
it's
out.
It's coming at you hard.
It's coming at you hard. And it's life comes at you fast, right? And so that's kind of, so my thing is, that's how I play within the,
I got you.
Within the line. And it's a dance. And I've had conversations where like, yo, you need to reel it in. They always say, you haven't crossed the line, but they're always worried I'm coming close.
You're getting close to it.
Getting close to it. But
you're dipping your toe.
I feel like I know. I feel like I can play that.
I got you.
It's a ballet.
I got you.
And I won't lie, there's a little bit of a flirtation you come
no,
up to
I
that
know.
Line,
it's,
right?
I know exactly what you mean. There's a flirtation with it. And
tantric.
Yeah, it is. It is tantric. All right, so let's get to sports. Quick hits. Who made the biggest offseason, who improved the most?
No, come on, man. Second most.
Is it the Golden State Warriors?
Course.
Is that going to work?
It is going to work. You know why? Because they have a system in place already. He knows what he signed up for because
right.
that's what he wanted, right? He saw what he was doing, this traditional NBA style of the last 40 years or whatever, where the star gets the ball, you know, the whole Doug Collins, give it to Michael, everybody get the fuck out of the way, right? That's what he's been doing for 9 years.
Yes.
It ain't working. And he looks over there and he sees, look how easy their shots are.
Uh-huh.
Look how much fun they're having, right? And winning like nobody else has won, right?
Yep.
Even with the finals loss, right? So in that sense, he knows what he's signing up for, and they have a system in place. So it's different from when Bosch and LeBron went down to Miami. Three guys who never played together before.
Right.
Everything else was piecemeal, and we don't even know what offense we're going to run because it's so different from what we were doing
right.
years past, right? That ain't the situation. He's coming in. He knows what he's doing. So they're going to get—
It's so funny. We didn't even say his name.
Yeah.
This whole conversation,
yeah.
we're talking about KD.
David West. Oh, no, I mean, my bad.
David West is the key, that's the key offseason thing.
That
dude's crazy. He turned out, is he $12 million? How rich is David West?
But you know
did
what?
He leave $12 million in Indiana?
Yeah, yes, he did. But you know what?
Wow.
A lot of people make David West jokes.
I like David West.
David West, beyond, I like the way he plays. David West is one of the, if I might use this word in the most affectionate of ways, it's one of the realest niggas in the NBA.
Is he?
Honestly.
He looks like he'd smack fire out your ass.
Honestly, when you talk about, so we got this thing when you're building teams, you need guys they call culture setters.
Right.
Culture setters, right? Dudes that, because I don't think you can have a successful locker room where either the coach or the GM has to keep everybody in check.
Right.
You need someone who's already in there.
Right.
I don't even need to come in because he's going to keep it in line. Not because I told him to, but because that's what he's about.
David right? West is one of those
David
guys.
David West is a culture setter.
Is he, because I don't, like, all I know about, like, you don't hear about him talking, like, you know, but is he, like, a tough guy? Like, he seems like he could kick some ass.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's not, like, a fake tough, like, the fake tough guys are out there trying to fight all the time.
Right, no, I'm saying, like, he's like a guy, like, you know,
guy,
he's like a guy, like, you smell, you don't want trouble
yeah,
with.
So I'll give you my favorite real tough guy story. Jerry Stackhouse.
Okay.
That's a real tough guy.
Why?
That's because when young guys get into it, their vets pull them back and say, leave Stack alone.
Right.
So there's a great story. I wish I remembered which player it was.
Some dumb fuck.
Some dumb fuck.
Let's just say some dumb fuck. Some young dumb fuck.
Tried Jerry. And Jerry was like, and the guy kept talking. He's like, Jerry's like, all right, let's see what happens after the game. Game ends. Jerry Stackhouse goes back to his locker room, showers, changes, puts on his suit and tie. Jerry's a very professional guy, right? He wears a three-piece suit, dress code or not.
Right.
He's got the pocket square.
Right.
put the blings in the ears, gleaming. He's out there answering questions very calmly about the game. This is what happened. What about that altercation? Oh, you know, it's basketball. Things happen sometimes, and guys get in the heat of the moment.
Right.
Press is over. Everybody gone? Okay. Takes the earrings off. Takes off the tie. Takes off the shirt and the suit. Puts on his practice gear. Goes to the bus.
Of the young dumb fuck.
Oh, yeah. They had to have, like, the armed security escort.
He was ready to shoot joints.
He was ready to bust that dude's ass, like, mercilessly.
He's that guy. Who are the guys in the NBA besides David West now that have that reputation?
Oh, man.
That are still playing, that are in the league?
Yeah.
Who are some of the young guns? Like, who are some of the young? Mm. Give me three.
I'll give you a young gun.
Give me a young gun.
James Johnson.
Okay.
Right? James, so I don't know if you know James Johnson backstory. For the listeners who aren't, like, super-duper NBA fans, this is a dude, he was kind of a mid-range draft pick, first-round pick. He's had an okay career, but definitely not as good as people thought he was going to be. But James Johnson comes from a family, and I'm not exaggerating. It's like there's like 12 brothers and sisters, and everyone, including the mom and the daddy, is a black belt in some sort of martial art. The dad's business is he runs an MMA training center.
I don't want any problems with the dad, the mom, anybody who knows
they're
the dad.
They're the whole family.
They're ass kickers.
They're all ass kickers. So James Johnson.
The sisters, the brothers, the whole
everybody.
Everybody could kick some ass.
Can roundhouse kick you.
Shit.
Can run in a straight line, do a front flip,
right.
Land on his feet, and hit the ground running.
Right.
Right.
That's not something I could do or I ever even tried to do.
But on top of that, James Johnson. There are some guys who are bullies who pick on the weak, right?
Right.
James Johnson isn't that. This is the most fascinating guy I've ever seen. James Johnson is the guy who picks on the bullies. So the word was in high school, all his closest friends were like the meek, the kids that were like disabled, the kids who were like dorks in the nerd club. Like those were his friends.
I got you.
And why was because he was walking around just hoping that somebody would pick on him.
Shit.
So he could bust their ass.
Okay.
And so James Johnson in the NBA right now, I can't remember. Man, I wish I remember. Someone just told me this story the other day. There's a player, I can't remember who it was, but someone who's talking trash the whole year. And
to him?
No. In general.
Oh, okay.
And James' whole thing was like, I can't wait for him to say something about me so I can just destroy him. Mm. And the guy never said it.
He wanted to, though.
Oh,
well, he's looking to kick some ass.
Yeah.
Who are the other tough guys in the league? Ooh. David West,
definitely.
I mean, everybody. I mean, Ron Artest is a Ron, everybody kind of knows, like, okay.
Ron, and you know what? Ron's a sweetheart. That's like, people don't get it. Ron's a really nice guy.
Total sweetheart. But he's got crazy eyes.
Yes, well.
Yeah. He's got eyes that make you go.
Ron can black out.
He's got his stripes. He's proved.
Right.
He's proved. Matt Barnes is about that life.
Matt Barnes drove 91 miles. People, because he's light skinned and he's got pretty hair and everything.
I'll be sure shit.
Yeah, everyone thinks Matt Barnes is real. And we have Matt Barnes in Phoenix.
Yes,
I got stories that I'll never tell. Matt Barnes is real fucking deal. Do not try him.
No.
Don't try him on the street. Don't try him on the court.
Right.
He's one of those guys, like, because he's got...
He's got the eyes, too. Like, when you're up on Matt Barnes, you're like, I don't want no problems with him. Yeah. I'm not going to make any Christopher Williams, I'll be sure jokes.
Yeah.
You got crazy eyes, too. Like, it's in the eyes. You could tell.
Udonis Haslam.
Yes.
Another one.
He's a goon. He's a straight-up goon. I don't like him because I'm a New York Knicks fan, and I don't like him from way back when, and I'm never going to like him. Okay? I didn't like him when he had hair. I don't like him when he had braids. I don't like him. I wouldn't tell this to his face.
Right.
I'm just letting you know. All right. So what teams improved the most besides Golden State Warriors?
I would say the Boston Celtics.
Why?
Got Al Horford, who was, by everyone's account, I think the number two free agent on the market. We're not counting LeBron, obviously.
Yes.
So he's a guy that fills a need for them. He makes them better because he's so smart, such a smart player, high IQ on both sides of the ball.
Team player,
leader, because you need a little bit of that. You need someone, again, I wouldn't put him David West level culture setter,
right.
But definitely an adult in the room.
Right.
Who else improved themselves?
Minnesota's still.
I thought they could have done more. Utah improved themselves a lot.
Why?
They went out and got Joe Johnson.
Yes. But has he got anything left in the tank?
But they don't need him to be anything left in the tank, Joe Johnson. They need
culture again. Professionalism.
Professionalism. And also just a vet. Like, because last year they were in the playoff picture and they had this massive collapse.
Right.
In the last couple of weeks.
Right.
You know, guys are getting jittery out there.
Right.
You need someone who's been there. Maybe not to make the play specifically, but just to talk these guys through these moments, right? Joe Johnson's had a, say what you want.
Yes,
he
yes.
got a lot of money, but he's had a good career in this
yes.
league. He's been in those moments. They traded for Boris Diaw.
Yes.
High level, one of the most intelligent basketball players I've ever been
loves
around.
Loves the donuts.
Loves his donuts.
And
his,
a croissant.
His croissants, yeah. Loves his cappuccino, too.
Absolutely, as he should. And what about my Knicks?
And they
your
traded
Knicks.
For George, they traded for George Hill, too.
Yes, George Hill, too.
And, that
and he got rid of the blonde hair.
He did. He's no longer one of the, what, remember Meteor Man, was it?
Oh, yeah. I remember him, and I also remember Cisco. Anyway, so what about the Knicks? What's the reality of the Knicks?
So,
what's the reality of Derrick Rose? I mean, the Derrick Rose thing is a humongous if, right? It's one of the biggest ifs going into next season.
Right, so it's... My personal opinion is I don't think he can ever be the player he once was.
I agree, but he doesn't need to be.
He doesn't need to be, as long as he understands it, because if he's still trying to live in the past,
right,
then you got a problem, right? But if he tempers his expectations, he can be a much better version of Derrick Rose, right?
Right.
Joakim Noah, obviously.
Love him.
I don't, yeah. Dude, like, man, Joakim Noah came in the league, got drafted by the Bulls, and said, I grew up a Knicks fan, I hated the Bulls.
Yes.
But then, like, bought in to be in the Chicago Bulls. I don't know if anyone, literally since Bernard King probably, who had the pride of like, oh man, I'm finally a Knick.
Yes.
Like Joakim Noah.
I agree.
Nobody.
I agree.
And no disrespect to Oak and Pat.
I know.
But they're not from New York.
Yes.
Right?
And he really like, you know, because he's foreign, his dad's foreign,
right.
And he has that sort of, you know, sort of, he just has that thing about him. I love that dude.
Yeah, but, he grew up in the city.
Yeah,
right?
he's a New York dude. And he's also rah-rah to begin with.
Yes.
So for him to be rah-rah with the Knicks, and also at this point in his career where he's been through some stuff, he's been through injuries, he's been, like, they've been close, they went down, changed coaches. The Garden, you're right.
He's going to have at least one play a night where everyone just gets up and cheers.
They're going to go nuts for him.
He will bring you memories of Charles Oakley and of Starks and
I agree.
Anthony Mason and rest in peace, all those guys.
Yep.
He's got an if too. Cause
the injuries.
Injuries, right?
Yes.
So then we go to the next guy they brought
in. Have you ever seen a shot as disfigured as I didn't notice it until I was in Chicago and I saw them live and I was like, is that I thought maybe it was a mistake.
So
that's a disfigure.
He's right there with Bill Cartwright.
No.
Jamal Silk Wilkes.
Those guys made shots. Cartwright was a scorer.
He makes that shot, by the way.
Yo.
He's like a 73% free throw shooter with that form.
But it's not just his free throw. It's his jump shot. It's like with the first time you see it and notice it, you're like,
Right.
Is that an amalgamation?
Right.
And then you're like, this is the way. How did he make it to the NBA with that shot? It's incredible.
Because you didn't draft him to shoot. You
but
drafted him to
it's crazy, though. That is a.
But he's got it to a point where
it works.
It works for him.
It's like a side ball.
Exactly. That's exactly right. He spins it like off his hands.
But I love Noah. Okay, so who. And I think that these guys, I've never seen them play. I can't say their names correctly. Willie Hermangas.
Hernan Gomez, yeah.
Is that how they say it? Is that how we're saying it for today?
Hernan Gomez, if you want to impress the Dominicans.
You got to try to do an accent. Yeah. And the other dude, Kusamingas Madingas.
Yeah, Mendagas Kusamingas.
I have a good feeling about both of these guys.
I think, this is the part where you need to temper your expectations, though.
I'm not saying everyone's going to be Porzingis, and I'm not saying Porzingis is Dirk Nowitzki. I'm not saying that. I don't think that Porzingis is Dirk Nowitzki.
Yeah.
But I'm not one of these people like Porzingis is going to average 33 points next year. But I just feel like he hit it with Porzingis, and I don't know. I have a good feeling.
Their international scouting is good. And by the way, Hernan Gomez played with Porzingis on the same Spanish team. That's how they saw him. They were watching Porzingis like,
that's what I'm saying.
He's pretty good, too.
Do I think we're...
You know who else I like for them? Courtney Lee.
That's a good pickup. That's a solid guy.
That's a good, solid guy. And they need
professional.
That shooting guard. Like, Courtney Lee is what they thought they were getting in Aaron Aflalo. And I told everybody last time, I was like, look, if you think Aflalo's going to come here to play defense and just hit another kid.
Bad attitude, right?
Not bad attitude. He just has a image of himself that is not congruent with
now
who
you're
he
in
is.
Sacramento, Aflalo. Thanks for
Have
nothing. Don't let the door hit you.
Exactly.
Sorry, because you did us wrong. And you were complaining.
But I don't think he did him wrong, because I think if you did your homework about Aaron, you would have known that's who he is. He's a guy who thinks he should be like a starting shooting guard at the All-Star game.
Right.
And like when everyone has this image of him when he was in Denver years ago.
Right.
Playing defense, hitting that corner three.
Party's like, over.
For him, it's like, yo, those back, that was when I was an intern.
Right.
I'm full time now. I got benefits. I got vision. I got the Disney pass. Right. I'm not going back to that life.
Right.
That, so they thought they were getting the intern, and they didn't get that.
And you saw Ben Simmons play live. What is your take on what you saw so far in the summer league? Did he look like he got sleep? And because what I saw he likes to pass, which is always a good thing. But is this guy going to make an impact immediately?
Yeah, you know, here's the tough part. I went on SportsCenter and said this, and I think I made a lot of people uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
I said Ben Simmons is like PEDs. You give me PEDs, I'm not doing shit on a baseball diamond. I'm still terrible. You give PEDs to Barry Bonds, he's the greatest baseball player of all time.
Okay.
Right? So Ben Simmons, you put him with no talent teammates, he'll have some nice passes like he's doing in summer league. Wins and losses, not really going to impact a lot. You put him with dudes who know how to play, all of a sudden he's making them look like all-stars.
Okay.
So the better his teammates, the better and better he is.
I got you.
He can improve you in ways that for guys who know how to play and know how to score and know how to finish, they're like, oh, this is great playing with a dude like this.
I got you.
As opposed to playing with a guy who, is supposed to
cut
there.
That's a good analogy.
Or if I cut there, I miss that layup. Like, did we do that in summer?
He knows how to play basketball.
He knows how to play basketball.
He can't shoot. I mean, he should call Noah up to get some shooting lessons.
Yeah.
Because
he's got an ugly shot, too.
It's
Simmons.
Vicious looking, too. It's not like at Noah level.
Not Noah level, but it's still pretty bad. And it's obvious he's very self-conscious about it. The one thing about Noah,
you notice that?
Yeah.
Oh, Noah's embracing. Noah, he doesn't give a shit.
He doesn't give a shit.
He doesn't care that it looks bad. He doesn't give a shit.
Right.
So you think that Simmons, playing in Philadelphia is going to be tough the first few years.
The first few years. And
they
again.
They get good draft picks every single year and something goes wrong.
Well, you know what? I think there's a different management in town now. So I think they're going to start making some changes. But Simmons, so this happened to him in college. He went to LSU.
Right.
But the team he had wasn't that good. The coach he had wasn't that good. And what happened was he mentally checked out because when you're a genius level and you're surrounded by people, it's easy to become bitter and like, why should I give a shit?
Right.
And that, to me, that's the biggest concern for, not concern.
You think he's that level? Like he has that potential?
As far as just understanding the game.
You see it.
Boris Diaw is genius level basketball player.
Right.
That doesn't mean Boris Diaw is the best player in the league.
I got you.
But Boris Diaw, if you put him with good players,
yes,
he loves playing. If you put him with guys who don't know how to play, the guy's like, what am I doing here? So for them, their biggest, not concern, the word I should use, their biggest challenge is to keep him engaged and positive and not lose sight of, hey, look, this is temporary.
Right.
We're building something.
Right.
We're going to be great. You're going to be the centerpiece of that.
I got you.
As long as they can keep him on that wagon, I think he can keep playing positive. But he's got to learn how to shoot. And
it's important for a basketball player
to look for his shot. Because in the NBA, when they figure out you don't want to shoot, it makes it a lot easier to play defense.
Right.
Because we're playing you for the pass. And it's harder to find those passing angles. Right?
I got you. What about this kid who I've been following? I think everybody's following him because of just his size and his look, Thon Maker.
Yeah.
Who he scored 17-17 again.
Yeah.
It's summer league, but is this kid really? I mean, he handles the ball. He's got great footwork for somebody so big. I never seen a big guy move the way he moves so fluidly.
Right. So he's got.
And explain who he is.
Okay, so Thon Maker is actually from the same country I'm from. He's from Sudan.
Okay.
Right? That's where I was born. He's born in South Sudan now, which is now two different countries.
Okay.
But when he was born, it was all one country. The part of the country he grew up in was war-torn. A lot of awful shit happened.
He grew up there.
Was a refugee. Wow. Left. And for a lot of those people, that meant walking across borders through dangerous terrain, through landmines, through enemy fire, through wild animals, right? And then from there, went to, you know, a refugee camp. And from there, ended up seeking asylum in Australia.
Okay.
And Australia is where there's a huge population of Sudanese people in Australia. And a lot of them are getting introduced to basketball there.
Right.
And now we're seeing those guys actually come of age.
Right.
And now they're coming over. So he came over. He played a little prep school here, played a little prep school in Canada, thought about going to college, decided that he was eligible for the draft, you know, legally speaking, because he's 19 in the year and he's a year removed from his high school class.
Right.
Declared for the draft. People thought he might go in the second round, maybe late first round. Ends up going top 10. He gets 10th to Milwaukee. Very, very gifted athlete in terms of, like you said, fluid for a guy that size.
What is he, 7?
7'1", probably. with a 7'7".
He looks crazy tall.
He's crazy tall, crazy long, but moves well. Like Durant. Durant's a 7-footer.
But a little bit more filled out also. I mean, he's thin, but he's not like a broken toy. Like when Durant was that age, he looked crazy. He still looks like a broken toy. Like he's like, like there's something fluid about this kid, Thornmaker.
Very fluid. Now, the one thing I'll say is his skill level isn't where it needs to be.
Okay.
I was having this conversation with Steven Jackson, our mutual friend.
Yes. Captain
Jack, who, by the way, he's trying to make a comeback.
Yes.
And if he does, put him on the list of tough guys.
For sure.
Right. But anyway, so Thon looks the part and like can put the ball on the floor and do things, but he's not NBA level. Like you can do that against guys at the level you're doing. You try that against NBA defenders, they'll get you.
I got
His shot looks nice, but it's still not good enough.
I got you.
So he's got if you take Thonmaker like the Bucks, you have to be patient. We're gonna put a lot of development work into him. And
right.
He's got the potential. Now the good thing about him. Heart of a lion.
Okay.
Hard worker, wants to be great. And it's kind of crazy, man. There are a lot of guys that don't want to be great.
He wants it.
He wants to be great.
Okay.
And that's a big part of it. But there's, like I told Jack, like there's a lot of guys that really truly wanted to be great. And they just like sometimes the talent just it never connects.
I want it to be great.
Yeah.
Okay. You're great.
You're great at something else.
I'm great at something else. Yeah. But I want it to be great on the court. This is the Iron Rapport Stereo Podcast. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Who do you love talking basketball the most to? Since you're around all these people, like who do you like go like, this is a conversation, like a person, besides me, of course, but who do you like who's like one of the best basketball minds in your opinion that you have relationships with or that you've dealt with on the air? Like who do you really respect?
Oh man, there's a lot of people. You know what it is, Mike, is the idea that you talk to different people for different perspectives.
Okay.
Right? So I enjoy talking to Tracy McGrady as someone who legitimately could have said at one point I was one of the three best basketball players on the planet.
Right.
That's somewhere where none of us have ever been.
Right.
So when he says stuff, even if I argue and disagree, I'm still like, okay, I got to like.
You got to consider it.
This is what it's like when you're standing up here and looking down there. Right. I love talking to Jack about someone who clawed it. He built this shit, right?
Right.
Clawed
Steven Jackson.
Well. Yeah. Captain Jack, because he played in Venezuela and the Dominican Republic.
Right.
And was a CBA or D-League call-up or whatever. And then eventually earned his way to making a lot of money.
Right.
And winning a championship and all that, right? I like talking to the old heads.
Right.
Because I like to know about the game, what it was like, how it was different. One of my guys, John Shumate, he's a scout for the Suns. I learned a lot from that man. John Shumate was on the Notre Dame team that broke the UCLA 88 game win streak.
Okay.
He was guarding Bill Walton in that game. Top four pick.
So he's seen it all.
Elizabeth, New Jersey native.
Okay.
Played against Dr. J at the Rucker, won MVP at the Rucker. He played at Rucker one time, won MVP, back when it meant something.
That's cool.
When, like, again, the stars of the NBA would come and play at the Rucker.
Right.
So this dude's got, like, stories
upon stories.
But his career was cut short because he had blood clots.
Okay.
Like what happened to Chris Bosh, but imagine it happening to you in your rookie year.
Right.
Right? So he's got that perspective. Same time, I got my man Mark West. Played 19 years in the league, guarded Shaq, guarded Hakeem, guarded David Robinson, guarded all the great centers of the day, and then can tell you, like, what it was. So, like, why was it so hard to guard Hakeem? Because here's why. First of all, he looks skinny. He's the strongest son of a bitch you've ever seen.
Really? Right? Is that what he said?
Yeah. And he said the first thing he would do when he catch it is he'd jump and catch on 2 feet. So what does that mean? He said he hasn't established his pivot foot.
Right.
So you're out there scared as shit. Is he going left? I don't know what's going on. And he said, and then when he goes, what he'll do is he'll hit you in the chest, like with a shoulder or with the elbow. And again, it doesn't look like it, but it's like it immobilizes. And then he's going as soon as you react to that, he's always already going the other way.
Okay.
So these are things, again.
I got you.
Like, I can watch film on Hakeem all day long.
But you're never going to feel the
dude describing
talk about
to me
the strength.
What it's like.
Because that's right. Not something you'd mention when you talk about Hakeem Olajuwon. Is, yeah, you're not going to mention the strength.
We're talking about his footwork
the speed,
and his touch and all
right
that. Like, nah, this dude is hitting you the whole time. And at the end of the game, you're tired. He said, that's why Joe Klein did the best job against him.
Because he was strong.
Because Joe Klein was strong. And Joe Klein was so slow that Hakeem was going to move and go counter. And Joe never reacted to the first move, so he's going into the counter. Joe's still there.
I got you.
So,
what about Phoenix and Nash? Like, give me one of your best like during that Phoenix Stoudemire run, and my man D'Antoni,
yeah,
his mustache.
Yeah.
Like, give me
he shaved
something.
The mustache, by the way. I saw him in
he
Vegas.
Shaved the mustache.
He shaved the mustache.
He did. Why didn't he shave the mustache when he came to the Knicks? He should have shaved the mustache then, maybe, because I feel like he's going to do well
funny
in Houston.
He shaved the mustache, and when I look at him, I still see it. Like, it's the ghost of the mustache is still chilling right there.
The ghost stash.
Yeah, man.
That's funny. What was that like being around that? Like, that kind of, those guys that were like, they were in their groove right
so
then.
So we had, that year, we had a 15-game winning streak, and then we had a 17-game winning streak.
Right.
We legitimately went through about 3 months of basketball where we thought, like, nobody can beat us.
Mm.
Nobody can ever beat us. We had eight guys, a solid eight-man rotation. I want to say five of those guys were shooting 37-38% or better from three, and the ones who weren't were shooting 50% or better from the field. Like, our efficiency was off the fucking chain.
Was it all Steve Nash?
No, I mean, it was, I like to say it's symbiotic. Like, obviously it wouldn't work without Steve, but Amari Stoudemire.
Right, he was
like,
he was incredible.
You could put a lot of people in that position could not do what that guy
right
was doing.
Right,
and Steve could throw some bullshit passes because he knew Amari could catch him.
Right.
So one of my favorite things was in one of those playoff games against the Spurs, Steve went behind the back, left hand, through someone's legs in a tight situation. And I'm just like, how can you do that? But then I think it was Griff who explained to me. He's like, yo, when you're a genius, you like to push the boundaries. Like,
right.
How genius am I?
Right.
What's my limits?
Right.
And
he went behind the back through someone's leg.
Left hand.
Damn.
And Amari caught that shit and
banged it.
And banged out. Yeah. Dude, I, you know, used to rebound when I was a video coordinator, and they go to, we had like all types of drills, speed drills, like got to get a bunch of layups up, whatever. Amari, when he dunked, it sounded like a sonic boom. It was
right.
Like, pow! It was like
he
an
had
explosion.
Such power, right?
Dude, he.
And his hands, he would like grapefruit the ball.
Yeah, grapefruit the ball and soft touch. He didn't have to dunk it.
Right.
He had such, like, he could accelerate to the rim.
Right.
And then at the last second.
Right.
Give it a touch for it to drop.
Right.
Man, I'm trying to think who else was on that team. Roger Bell.
Yeah,
another
he was
real
tough
dude. Real dude, man. Real ass dude. That's my vet right there.
Okay.
Man. Like, when I first came in, he was the guy that took me under his wing.
That's cool.
And all that. Like, tough defensive guy. Didn't take shit. Wasn't scared of any
relentless
challenge. Relentless. One of my favorite stories. You're talking about why he clotheslined Kobe. That Kobe was hitting him like on the rip through with the elbow, and then he told the ref, he does it one more time. If you don't stop it, I'm going to do something to stop it. And he did it again. And he's like, oh, or no, actually he said he hit Steve, I think. He didn't even do it to him. He hit Steve. And so Rodgers went out there and clotheslined the shit out of him.
Man.
And by the way, that's how you know the real ones.
Absolutely.
Kobe was like,
right.
And then he tried to do the brush off, you
right
know, no.
Right.
You know.
That's enough.
Yeah. You know who to mess with and who not. Because we've seen Kobe try to be tough.
Of course.
We've seen him trying to be tough.
He doesn't need to be tough. You're Kobe.
Yep.
Who's better in their prime? I think Steph, and we could say he's in his prime now, Steph or Steve Nash?
Man, I
know now Steve obviously played longer at this point,
yeah,
but compare the two.
It's now, it's Steph. But what Steph is doing is, so I said this, remember were you there that day when we were at Byron Scott on the jump?
Yes, yes.
Remember we were talking about the Lakers and the Warriors,
yes,
and who would beat them,
yes,
in Showtime,
yes,
whatever.
Yes, yes.
And I said the Warriors because you ain't never seen that shit before. But what they're doing is built upon generation to generation that are coming off your shoulder.
Right, that was good.
So if they see further than you, they're only because they're standing on your shoulders.
I got
right?
you. Yeah, that was good. Because what we're talking about, what we were just referencing was all these analogies of could the Bulls beat the 73 win Warriors, or could the
Showtime.
The Showtime Lakers. And I think these conversations are so stupid. Right. It's like, could Obama beat George Washington in chess? Yeah. It's like, who can't? This is dumb.
Never, yeah.
Mike Tyson versus Ali, it's not happening.
Not happening.
It's so stupid.
It's the plot to Rocky V, right?
Yeah.
Right,
it's never happening.
Or was it Rocky V or Rocky VI?
Rocky VI.
Yeah, with Antonio Tarver.
Yeah, that was, exactly.
The Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah, and we saw that Rocky, and it was actually Rocky Balboa,
which
broke my heart to see. That was
You like Creed?
I really did like Creed.
I like Creed, too.
I thought it revamped something that I didn't think was revampable. Yeah. It had emotion.
Yep.
I thought Jordan was great. I thought Stallone was great. I thought it was good.
Let me ask you this. I'm sorry to go off topic.
No, go ahead.
I want to ask you questions.
Go ahead.
You're a Hollywood guy. You're a movie guy. There's a part of me that's like, I can't stand all these remakes and all these reboots and stuff.
I don't like it either.
But then there's a part of me where I'm like, some of these things, like Creed, for instance, when you get a good writer, a real writer, not someone who's doing it because, Rocky VII would make a lot of money, but someone's like, there's a dope story we can tell out here.
Right.
It feels like we're getting some good shit. So I look at, like, the Star Wars, the one that came out, and I was skeptical. It was all skeptical. Went in there, set. I went by myself. I was in Bristol. I had a day off. I went and watched this movie. Man, I'm, like, damn near crying in that movie because I'm like, you know what it was, Mike? I saw Return of the Jedi in the theater.
Yes.
And I'm watching this movie. I'm so into the story. And then at one point, I felt like I felt when I was watching Return of the Jedi. Like, just so into the story and into these characters. And, like, it hit me emotionally. And, I want, like, my kid, obviously I'm in Bristol. Like, I wish I'd waited. I wish I took my kid to go see this movie. And because I wanted my kid to feel that same way that I felt. And so I'm asking you, as a guy who's in Hollywood, writer, director, actor, like, do you immediately like, not another, or do you like, well, let me see what this is about?
It depends. Like, I know, like, Creed, for instance, new director, it wasn't, him fighting again, new take on it. Someone had a clear, passionate, thought out point of view. Ryan Coogler, I hope I'm saying his name right, because he's awesome director.
Dope,
did Fruitful Station. You know, with the Star Wars ones and the Star Trek ones.
Yeah, that's another good one.
It's hit and miss, because the bar is so high, and I think that so many things could go wrong. You know what I mean? When they're just taking titles like 21 Jump Street, it's like almost like you're just paying for the title, then it has nothing to do with it. So I think it pros and cons. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with, trying to capture that nostalgia.
Right.
And trying to capture, like you're paying for the franchise. You know what I mean?
But sometimes, like, it's funny. The Batman movies that Christopher Nolan did, like, if you go back and watch the Batman with Michael Keaton, which was a classic.
Yes.
It's kind of like silly, cartoonish almost.
I agree.
So it's like, you got like...
Hey, but it's the same thing like you said about the Golden State. It's like took all they learned from that and pushed it forward.
Pushed it forward.
And Christopher Nolan, pushed it forward.
Right,
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get you. That's a good point, man. But, I'm like, so when you are looking at movies, what are you looking for?
I mean, I think ideally, it's just like with sports, you need to be around good people. So you want to have a good director.
Right.
That's first and foremost. You almost more than a good director is the script.
Right.
Because you know, it's like you need the ingredients, because you never know if you're making a movie. So many things could go wrong. You could have a good script, but not a good director. You could have a good script and a good director, and it just, the tone isn't right.
Right.
The tone of a movie is important. Like, is it going to be...
How do you know that? How do you know that before
a
you...
A lot of that you don't know.
Right.
A lot of that sometimes, you...
Because you can know the director, you can read the script.
And you can have conversations and up the wazoo until you get on that set that first day, and then you'll know.
Right.
There's just something, you you could just inherently, you could just feel
right.
if it's right or if it's not right, the flow right. of things, you know what I mean? And it's like any kind of, you know, you were talking about your days in Phoenix, like before they got rid of everybody, there's a syncopation, you know, there's a forward.
Everybody on that same exactly. page and we'll pull in the same direction.
Right? All right, I'm going to let you go. How are you feeling about your first time at the ESPYs? You're going to the ESPYs tonight. Are you excited? Who are you looking forward to meeting? And do you know if the Rivers family will be there? So it's a three-part question. Who would be the person you'd be the most excited to see that you've never met?
That I've never met?
What athlete?
Yo, honestly, if Serena Williams is there, and I don't know if she is because she's just coming off of Wimbledon. Maybe she is. Maybe she made the long flight in 3 days and it's relaxed enough. Serena Williams, because that's like living legend right there.
Yeah, man. I love Serena.
Like, that's, you know, we talk about, and I don't want to be hyperbolic, but she might be the greatest athlete, male or female. Not tennis player, the greatest athlete when you talk about, because what she's doing at her age.
It's crazy.
You don't see that in tennis.
Yes.
Right? Like, they burn out a long time ago.
Yes.
And so she's managed to stay steadily at that level.
She'd be the person to be the most excited.
I think so, because like,
what about Venus? What if Venus is there?
That'd be cool too. Venus once stepped on my sister's foot, by the way.
I have no problem with that.
Yeah, but Serena, like, so, I mean, Venus is a great player.
Yes.
Serena's like, again, might be the greatest athlete of yes. our generation, right? Who else? I'm trying to think. Who else? It's weird, man, because you know when you work at ESPN, you see so many people.
Right,
it kind of
right.
it kind of diminishes it.
Right. They're all going to be in one room at the yeah. ESPYs. Are you wearing a suit?
I'm wearing a suit, man. Shout out to Alba Designs.
Okay.
They hooked me up. They do a lot of the draft guys.
Okay. Are you wearing something crazy?
No. I explained it.
Benoit Benjamin style? Like, what are we talking about?
No, we're not doing no Karl Malone's
okay,
or nothing like
right,
that.
Okay, all right,
it's a black suit.
Lean and mean.
The shirt, the lean and mean, definitely the Euro cut.
Okay.
The shirt is a little bit colorful.
Ezekiel Elliott? Shirt?
Nah.
Midriff?
No midriffs.
Okay.
No midriffs. Yo.
The shirt's a little colorful.
Colorful.
But it's the ESPYs.
Because here's my thing. I would say I have a conservative taste, but like I want a little flourish.
Right.
And so they came up with a great concept. The black suit. I'm wearing J's with them. I'm wearing the 72-10.
Okay.
And so the shirt is kind of red with some sort of pattern that's supposed to go with the red in the Jordan logo on
it. I got you.
You know, and then the black, and then the black tie, skinny black tie. I'm excited, man. I'm excited to see what... I still haven't actually gotten possession of the suit.
Okay.
So we'll see how it goes, man. But yeah, man, it's kind of weird, you know, and this is a nice way to wrap it all up. Man, like, I went from, you know, just a dude.
Right.
Even, like, I went from a dude laying in bed on a Saturday morning... And now it's like, I'm first doing a podcast with Michael Rappaport, man. Yo, you understand? Your character in Bamboozled is one of my favorite characters of all time, man.
Thank you. It's a good movie.
Yeah, man. It's a great movie,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I appreciate that.
You know, and the way it was shot, you know, it was ahead of its time.
Yep.
Everything was digital, right?
Yep.
Handheld, a lot of handheld.
Digital, handheld, planted cameras. It was like we did that movie, there would be cameras all over the room, and we would, like, do a couple of takes, and they'd be like, all right, we're done. I'm like, but we got to do coverage. He was like, no, there's a camera there. And I'm like, oh shit.
Wow.
You know, it was like spy cameras.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Like, I didn't know, you know, they were like little playing around with all the digital mediums and stuff like that with Spike and a great Ellen Kurris, the DP. So they were screwing around.
Man, that was a dope movie, man. Still one of my favorites. But yeah, man. So like just to be here, man, that's like, it doesn't even make sense. The funny thing is, and I promise the last thing, right? I got my cousin is the president of Dreamville, which is a record label that J. Cole is on.
Okay.
Right? Like, him and J. Cole went to college together. They're best friends.
Yep.
And my cousin is the president of this label, right? And I knew all these guys before they were anything, right? Our best friend who went to high school with my cousin is an actor on the HBO series Ballers. He was on Power. He's been in a bunch of things. I'm obviously doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And last summer, we were all hanging out together. I was like, yo, 10 years ago, we weren't doing shit with our lives.
Right.
And now look at us, and we tell, like, I'll tell people, like, oh, yeah, that's my boy. And people are like, one of my friends at work at ESPN was like, yo, what was in the water? Like, what happened to you guys? I'm like, honestly, it's just a lot of it is luck, but a lot of it is also when the clouds clear out and you know, okay, this is my path.
Right.
Man, if you want that shit, you can get it, and that's that's basically what we all did independently, and now it's a fun time to be where we are, like kind of all enjoying each other's success from afar.
Well, I appreciate that, and that makes sense, and you know, it's good for people to hear, you know, how you got your start, and I wish you luck. I'm a fan.
Oh man, thanks.
Enjoy the ESPYs. You know, get close. I'm not coming. Get close to Serena. Get close to Serena. I don't like events. Too many people. I'll get bored. I'll just.
I don't know what it's like, so I
would go. Enjoy yourself. Get close to Serena, but don't get too close, okay? Because me and her, you know, like, she doesn't know it yet, we're kindred spirits, okay? Yeah. So just, you know, like, if you want to say hello, but I'm just telling you right now, like, you know, but if you bring my name up, just make sure you'll see a smile. We'll cross her face. It's the Iron Rapport Stereo Podcast. And we're out.